Greetings, and welcome to the 14th installment of our podcast series, The Workforce Lens, brought to you by Tarrant County College in North Texas. I am Shannon Bryant, Executive Vice President for Corporate Solutions and Economic Development, and I will be your host, moderating strategic conversations with employers and economic developers on all things related to preparing and growing the workforce today and the future. I would like everyone to help me welcome our guest today, Mr. Chip Balk, President of Corco USA, headquartered here in Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome, Chip, and thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for the invite, and I look forward to this podcast.
Yes, we have been spending some time together here lately, and so no pun intended, but let's drill down to the topic and start talking a little bit about Corco. Chip, if you could tell us a little bit about Corco, what's the history, the mission, the values of the organization? What are you all about?
Sure. Let's start with we're a geotechnical environmental drilling company, as you said, headquartered in Fort Worth. Corco as a name has been around for about 2 years, but the roots and foundation go back about 20 years through different joint ventures and mergers and name changes. While the current ownership right now, it's Corco USA, again, founded in July of 2020, right in Fort Worth. We talked about a geotechnical environmental drilling company. That's what we do primarily, and I'm sure we'll drill down further into that as this goes along. And you asked about the values. I've been with a lot of companies that really get way deep into the mission statements and values. We've tried to keep it really, really simple. We just believe in loyalty through professionalism, integrity, and quality. And that's both for our customers and our employees. And that's what we really strive to do. And I'm not real original. Our values, I kind of stole from the West Point, and we just don't lie, cheat, or steal, which I think I just violated maybe. We just don't lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. So we just try to keep everything with integrity and quality. That's really what we work to strive for.
There we go. Very good. So, Chip, how long have you been president of Corco? And tell us a little bit about your path to taking leadership there.
So I've been the president of Corco since its inception, and before that it was a company called East Green Logic that had really two different divisions to it, and my partner and I took the drilling division, which is now Corco, we spun that off to make it a standalone company. So that's how Corco came. East Green Logic, I was the COO of both divisions of that, and it had the drilling division, and it had what's called a due diligence division to that, and it's really headquartered in California that does, there's a close tie between the two, but it's in commercial banking. Anytime someone buys a piece of property, you've got to do due diligence on that piece of property. So it kind of tied nicely, but we decided as a board that it made more sense to split those in 2020. So COO before that of Eastgreen, split off, president of Corco since July of 2020.
Okay, very good. So let's talk a little bit about geotechnical and environmental drilling. What is it exactly?
And not many people know, as I didn't a few years ago either. So we like to say nothing is built in this country or the world without a geotechnical or environmental drilling being done. And a lot of people just don't quite know that. But as you look around the highway construction in Texas, any buildings, any of the infrastructure, a geotechnical drilling has to be done. What that means, my crews will go out and drill down anywhere from about 20 foot to about 150 feet at different intervals and pull up rock or soil samples so they know what the integrity is under the ground. Those samples are given to an environmental or geotechnical lab when they do all the testing to understand how best to build on that piece of property. As you can imagine, there's a big difference between building a residential house and a windmill. It takes a different foundation. So we provide those samples to the labs who then write a report, then give it to the construction engineers who will then decide how best to build whatever it may be.
And is your industry focused specifically on commercial infrastructure or government infrastructure, or is it also focused in residential? Can you explain that to us a little bit more?
The answer is yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
We drill in front of residential houses. We've got several customers. That's all they do is build housing developments, so we drill in front of those. We'll drill in front of any commercial that's out there, whether it be dams, bridges, highways, TxDOT, commercial buildings, warehouses, There's several. Anything that's being built, we'll drill in front of. The government plays a big part because it's infrastructure, right? TxDOT, certain buildings, it's all infrastructure-based. So anything being built, it just depends on the type of samples they want and the depths they want to go. So anything being built.
So can you explain to us a little bit so we have a better understanding, why is this type of drilling important? What happens if we don't do this?
Well, we like to say we're building civilizations one hole at a time. That's kind of our little motto or catchphrase. If these drillings aren't done, then first off, the engineers aren't going to know how to build. They're not going to know how to safely build. That's why we really push the integrity and the quality of our samples, our work, because everything starts there with that, as I call it affectionately, a box of rocks that we give the labs. So if that's not done, or it's not done with quality integrity, then we're going to have a problem with that structure at some point down the road. And we see it all the time. Some of our drillings aren't for new construction. Some of them are for structures that are failing or having issues and will be called out by the engineers and the labs to go do drillings next to or through or around these structures to find out why is this failing. And they'll be able to determine that based on their lab tests and those type of things. But if we're not drilling a hole, in our thoughts, civilization stops to grow. There's no more buildings being built.
Can you give us an example of some kind of recent drill that you did where you had to do that, where something was failing and you had to go out, something that you could share with us just to kind of give us a story behind that?
Sure. We drill on many airports around the Dallas-Fort Worth area and other places. We've been out to DFW many, many times. And they're called slope failures. A lot of times you'll see a slope and you'll see it kind of start to slough off with the rain and stuff. You'll see those things happen. That's those nets you see, the orange nets catching dirt. Those are called slope failures. So there's a reason that may be happening. So we will go out and drill at a certain airport into those failures based on how they want us to drill and give them those things so they can correct those slope failures out there. Sometimes we'll drill at night at DFW because they don't want to shut down a busy airport, right? So there's night work there, and we'll be actually drilling on the tarmac to make sure things are correct. A lot of bridge failures or old bridges that need to be, how do we reconstruct that particular bridge? We'll drill all around the foundation. Sometimes we'll go up on the bridge, cut a hole through the bridge, and drill all the way right through the bridge, all the way to the subsurface, to whatever the engineer needs. So a lot more than people would realize and might make you stay up at night if you knew all the things that we're drilling in front of. But they're being proactive to make sure those things don't fail.
Right, absolutely. Needed that for safety purposes,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, correct.
So is Corco, is it just Texas-based? How many crews do you have that are drilling teams, and do you do this work outside of Texas across the country?
We do outside of Texas. Primarily, we're in Texas. We drill in Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arkansas, Louisiana. We have drilled in those areas when needed, but there's so much infrastructure going on, we stay primarily busy in Texas, and quite frankly, in the DFW area. We've got crews in San Antonio. We've got a couple of crews in East Dallas, Tyler area. Right now, we have 12 crews, and when we say crews, that's a rig, a support truck, a driller, and a helper. That's how we designate a crew. So right now, there's 12 that are spread out around the DFW, East Dallas, and San Antonio area.
And is it safe to say you're one of the largest drilling companies like this in Texas?
We would like to say we're one of the largest for sure, and we're growing to make sure we are the largest. But yeah, we're one of the larger ones. Our clients are kind of amazed when they start to talk to us, and we tell them, hey, we could put 2, 3, 4 rigs on your project to get it done faster and quicker for you. And well, how many do you have? Well, we have 12. And they're like, wow. So yeah, we're fairly large for this industry.
Nice. So would it be safe to say, obviously, anytime someone goes to build something, mm-hmm. that they need one of your people. So this is really an industry that is not just across the nation. This is an international job, right? Every time you build something.
Every time. Every
we
time
we need you folks build like
it.
You.
Every nothing is being built before we hand our labs a box of rocks, which is a core sample. So, or it's not supposed to be. I can speak to American standards for sure.
Right.
But you've got to provide that core sample so they know how to build. As I said, there's a big difference between a ranch-style house and a windmill. If you can imagine the structure that has to peer into a very, very hard rock, very deep, to keep that from toppling over. Right. So, yep, that is correct.
So, Chip, you and I visited quite a bit here lately talking about your industry, and it seems to be kind of the best kept secret, if you will, right? So tell us a little bit, so the audience understands, what are some of the challenges facing your industry right now?
Sure. And we've talked, I think you're right. I don't know if it's a secret. I just don't think anybody knows. I think we have an awareness problem. This industry, as you look over all industries as a whole, is fairly young. It's not that old an industry if you look at construction, how they did things. And it grew up, and I affectionately say, you know, America was built on what I call mom and pops, small business owners that start to build their business and may get, in our industry, you know, 2 to 5 rigs. That would be a fairly good mom and pop. And they can only do so much, right? And maybe it was a family business that you grew up, your sons, your daughters grew up in that business. Maybe your cousins or nephews kind of knew about it. What we found when I got into this particular industry, which was really interesting, was nobody knows about it. I didn't know anything about it before I got involved in it, and therefore nobody knows how to get into it. One of the questions I've asked, and we've talked about, Shannon, is if you want to be a geotechnical driller, that's what you want to do, first off, to even know that exists, and then how do you do that? Well, I'm blessed to have some guys that have been in this industry 40, 45, 30 years. They've spent their entire life drilling. And when I ask these type of questions, if you don't know somebody in the industry or your family's not in the industry, you're not in this industry. You're just not. And so there's a real problem of awareness of what the industry is and then getting quality people into the industry. And so that's the biggest issue we face with this industry is how do we grow? If I don't have a driller, doesn't make any sense to have a drilling rig, and therefore I can't drill for whatever the cause may be. So it's all about a workforce, which is how we kind of got into our discussions.
Right. So it sounds like two things. It's number one, awareness of the industry, and number two, a serious lack of workforce. But it certainly doesn't seem like there's any lack of work.
No.
To be done. So,
no, I could use 20 more crews and still be busy. The awareness, and I've done, you know, we've done the basic hiring like everybody does through different, you know, job things. And I do all the interviews. I just take it very personal who's going to come onto our team. And I always ask, what do you know about geotechnical drilling or engineering? I will tell you of the hundreds I've done, none. Unless you came from it, none. No one has ever known anything about geotechnical, which is amazing to me, but I didn't either. So,
well, I'm glad you're here today so we can talk about it and educate some people about it so they know. So
yes.
Your website says that you are changing the rules to the geotechnical drilling game. What does that mean?
So, as I said, this industry is primarily smaller companies, as I affectionately call mom and pops. I mean, mom and pops, you know, have built the skyline of Dallas, right, in this industry. And so one of the things with my background coming from some fairly large corporate structures and also working in some smaller ones, we want to kind of elevate, the professionalism of the industry a little bit, help bring some of that awareness, as we've talked about, bring in some training, certifications, and what does it really look like to be a best-in-class, world-class driller? What's that look like? We've overlaid technology on a lot of the stuff we've done, how we communicate with our customers. You know, it was interesting to me, you know, a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years when I got involved at the beginning of this, it just made sense to me when a customer would call and, hey, we need XYZ drilled, that we would provide them a quote for our services. And over and over and over, we found out we're the only company that provides a quote, the only one. They just kind of go out, they do it, and hope they get paid. So we're trying to elevate a lot of the business side of it from a professional. We like to say we want to have all the structures and things that a big corporation brings, but we want to keep that mom-and-pop family feel and take care of our employees like they are family. And that's a that's a tough balance. I've worked on both sides of that, so we're working on it.
It is. The more you grow, it's difficult to, you know, have the big corporation look and feel, but also to be able to maintain the quality, the value, and the customer-centric approach to your clients.
It can be difficult.
It just takes time.
It's difficult. And we've talked about leadership and management and those styles and coming from the military. That's probably the other way we're changing. The three guys I talked about with all the experience, they know how to drill. They've forgotten more about drilling in this industry than probably most people ever know. What I'm working with them now is leadership and mentorship, and how do you bring up the next group, and not in this dictatorial type of way that it is now, right? And the smaller companies, typically the owner's out drilling, right? So how much time are they focused on employees and those type of things and their career and their growth and those things? So it has to do with levels of quality leadership that are looking out at different sections and functions. In the military, I call it the rule of 12. You really can't manage any more than 12 individuals or it just gets lost. So we start to build those levels and try to take care of the employees in a different way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Leadership is definitely key. I always say, and I think I said it on every podcast, is, you know, people are your number one asset.
100%.
And you got to take care of them. And that also makes not only a difference from the retention standpoint, but also the recruitment standpoint. And that sounds like something for this industry specifically right now that is really needed. So
yeah, it's huge. And you're right. I was blessed. I worked for Stryker for many years inside, and they really preach employee engagement and Gallup. And the data is very, very clear that engaged employees help every bit of your business, from your bottom line to retention to recruitment to everything across the board. If your employees aren't engaged, your business is going to struggle because they are your most important asset. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, Chip, the future of geotechnical drilling, tell us a little bit about what you think that looks like, not only from a workforce standpoint and what we can do about that, but you also mentioned, you know, technology, innovation. What does that look like as far as how it's going to impact your industry moving forward?
Yeah, well, we can go way into the future. We'll start with, and I've been very honest, it's kind of bleak and scary. It's bleak and scary. The difficulties, I'm a member of many Facebook geotechnical drilling sites, and there's not a drilling company across the United States that isn't just begging for drillers, people that can drill, quality drillers. I couldn't even put a number of the shortage. The other part that's really, really scary, as I said, the guys I have, Dan and Dave and Ryan and Benny, who have been in this industry their entire professional career, it's a little bit more of a young man's game. It just is. It's not super easy work by any means. And so these guys are reaching that 60, 65 mark, and that's across the industry. They're kind of aging out. Which is a blessing for me. I mean, a lot of them are still out there, you know, drilling holes and fighting this pretty hard. That's where I bring them in and start on the leadership. And I need to get, I tell Dan all the time, 45 years in the business, the Corps of Army engineer has him on speed dial. He knows everything. I told him day one, I go, Dan, I'm not paying you from the neck down. I'm not interested in that. It's a neck up. It's what you have in your brain that I need to keep and preserve for this industry. And that's why I'm so passionate about this. And the Bennies and those guys, we've got to get that information, that knowledge that's truly in their brains, into a structured, formal training type of deal. And there's none, right? So there's a massive shortage. There is no real formalized training certification at all like you'd see for other type things, whether it's plumbing, welding, truck driving. There is none. And I don't see a path forward unless I start to partner with people as yourself to kind of
say,
fix this.
Sounds like you need to be talking to a community college.
I think I have. I think I've presented in front,
you
of,
have.
That,
yes,
in front
sir.
Of a community college. But it's a little bleak and scary. If we don't replace these drillers, we haven't developed a robot that can do it. And there's some thoughts on data, because I know Dan has drilled in some of the same vicinities 100 million times, but there are shifts. So I'm not sure data is ever going to replace actually seeing what's under there. Dan says the reason we drill is to know what's down there. And so even though there's a data collection play, we're years away from that. And so we've got to crack the nut of how do we produce drillers, which is where I really started from a training and background. And that's where we started. And then talk to you.
There you go. Very good. So yeah. A couple of questions for you. What industry association, or is there an industry association for this type of work that you do specifically in core sample drilling?
Mm-hmm. There's really two main ones. We're regulated by whatever water well licensing board there is, a Texas water well licensing board, the Oklahoma water well licensing board. And to be able to drill, and each state's a little different, you have to have someone or your company licensed with a water well license, okay, which is funny, right? There's not a geotechnical license. There's a water well. I'm not a water well drilling, but that's who governs us. So you have to have that license. So that's the biggest regulate. But in a nutshell, you just have to have one driller that has it, and then everybody else drills underneath them as an apprentice. So that's the one. And then the professional organization is the NDA, or the National Drillers Association. The professional organization, they've got chapters pretty much in every state. Eric Hutton is our president of the Lone Star chapter, who shares my same vision and view of how do we grow this, how do we protect this industry. And he's really pushing, and it's why we're partnering with the NDA to bring awareness to it. How do we save it? How do we train it? How do we certify it? How do we bring that professional standard to this industry? And so he's doing some great work, at least in Texas, for sure.
Right. Yeah, and that's the gentleman I met the other day,
correct?
Mm-hmm. So, but National Drilling Association, it's not just the geotechnical and environmental, it's also water and oil and gas as well?
Can be, but primarily it's us.
It's you.
The geotechnical.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Great. So tell us a little bit about the career opportunities in this industry. I want, for those who are listening to mm-hmm. this, which includes a lot of our students here at Tarrant County College, mm-hmm. if someone had an interest in getting into this industry, mm-hmm. tell us a little bit about what are the career opportunities.
I can certainly speak to Corco's career okay. opportunities. Other drilling companies, I think they're similar to the most part, but I don't think it's quite as structured as our career path. Everybody that interviews in front of me, I tell them McDonald's gives you a job. I don't give jobs. I give careers. And I want somebody to come, stay, and have a career.
Big difference.
Big difference. It's a big difference. And people have to understand that there's a big, big difference between a job and a career. So if you just come in off the streets, no experience whatsoever, the way we've structured. So if I want to say I'm going to have a career, I've got to have some structure, right? There's got to be a career path. There's got to be a way to get there. There's got to be steps on how to make the next rung, right? So you start out as a helper, okay? And you'll be with us. You'll get a 30, 60, 90 review, make sure you're doing all the right things, which is mainly, are you showing up to work? Are you a good team player? You've got that work ethic. You're doing those things. And then within about 6 months, you've kind of figured out what helpers do, which is basically help or assist the driller in the drilling activities day to day. We'll promote them to a driller's assistant. We just expect them to know a little bit more, understand the nomenclature of drills and this and that and all that kind of stuff. Then probably within another 6 months to a year, depending, every person moves a little bit differently and a little different speeds, we'll look to put you in what we call a DIT, or a driller in training. Fairly informal, fairly organic kind of structure we put together to help fill this gap of how do we train people. And they'll become a driller in training under one of our senior guys to learn how to manage the rig, how to drill. And they'll start in what we call the augering, or these residentials, 20, 40 foot augering. Pretty simple. I think I could maybe do that now after 3 years of watching this enough. And they'll become a driller. And when you become a driller with us, you move to salary. You move directly to salary. And that's somewhere between $55,000 and $65,000 a year. That's what you'll make. Then there's an art form that comes in. core drilling, kind of the next level, going down, you know, from 50 to 150 foot, bringing out the nice core samples, quality core samples, is what Dan will tell me is an art form. It's a feel of the different formations, the different rocks, the different issues you run into. It's an art form. That takes some time to develop. Not as much time as Dan will tell you because he learned OJT, right?
Right.
So once they've got that and we feel good, we'll start moving them into what would be called a senior driller. Senior driller, some of the requirements, you've had to run an auger rig for probably at least a year. You've got to have your CDL Class B, which is required. You've shown you've got good above-ground skills, dealing with the customer, dealing with issues, and you've got good leadership and mentorship for your helper. You've kind of probably raised one up, as we'd like to say. And then they'll move to the senior driller once we think they're ready to take on a core rig and do that. And that jumps from about 65 up to about 85-ish, maybe even $90,000, depending on the skill set and what you can or can't do. And there's different levels of coring, which I would butcher, and Dan would laugh at me if I tried to talk about all of them. And then the next one is really what we call a chief driller. And a chief driller, really the big mark is getting your water well license, which is not easy at all, which is another opportunity I want to chat with you about, as we've talked about CDLs. We became a CDL school because of necessity.
Right. You do the Class B, correct?
We do a Class B CDL. Anybody in the public, once we open completely, but internally, I needed CDLs. So I'm just an old Army guy. So we just got to make them. We got to train them. We got to make it happen. So we did that. The water well is the next mark on the pole for me. And as I look around, there is no training. There is no anything. If the stats are right that we heard in 2020, 200 drillers set for that test. You know how many passed? Five.
Yeah, it's really low. I worked with a group of individuals in a prior state before coming here, and the pass rate for that is not the best.
It's unbelievable. I mean, so what scares me about that, it tells me then that somebody's got a water well license. There's 195 drillers drilling underneath them that can't pass a test, so do they really know what they're doing?
Or are they just not having the proper training to pass it?
Or not that, or they just OJT. As a matter of fact, I've got a gentleman who's probably set more water wells than by far anybody in my company. He's just never passed the test. And so we thought, we're going to see how it goes. And he took it yesterday, as a matter of fact, and failed it. And failed it. And we tried, but there's no real training. And a lot of it was, believe it or not, and again, my wife, words have meaning. It's the vocabulary. Dave will call it this, Dan will call it this, Margarita might call it this, but the test has a nomenclature, a word that is precise and professional, and they may not know what that is. And so there's no standardization. That's kind of where I want to raise.
Yeah, sounds like that's what they're trying to do with the water well license, but there's not enough exam preparatory around it to make sure that everyone's trained appropriately to get there. So trying to set the standards to make it the gold standard, it sounds like what the attempt is, but we got to filter that down to individuals so they know what path they have to take to get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's really, here's a manual from 1802 or whatever this thing came from. It's about this thick. Study. That's not education. That's not training. That's not certification. That's good luck.
Yeah.
That's good luck.
All right. Well, we'll have to talk about that
offline. Yes. It's a big opportunity.
There you go. So tell us a little bit, Chip, about if you are going to hire someone from Corco or for Corco to start out, what kind of education and skill sets are you looking for to even bring in an entry level person to your organization?
So because it's outdoor work, we don't really look for an educational level. Believe it or not, we really don't. I've got guys that have dropped out of high school. I've got guys that have their GED. I've got guys that got a little bit of college. I've got guys that have a past. I'm okay with that. I really believe everybody's future starts today and moves forward. The past is the past. I'm not concerned what you did. That's kind of the lie, cheat, steal. Those are crimes of the heart for me, and I can't fix those. That's something your parents or somebody should have fixed a long time ago. So your education and all that is a little bit irrelevant for a baseline, for like a helper, right? I look for work ethic, attendance, the basic things that you would think is pretty common sense out there. Do you show up to work? Do you got a good track record? And one of the questions I always ask first, why are you sitting in front of me? Why are you here? Why are you here? And almost the number one answer is they're looking for a career. They've hit these jobs, right, whether it be in whatever industry, and it caps out. It's done. So they're looking for a career. They've been told a lot of things. So for me, it's work ethic. Are you going to be able to do the work outside in the elements? Can you lift augers? Can you do those things? So it's a physically manual job. And are you just someone I would want to work with every day behind a rig? It's really that for me, at a baseline.
So it's really the essential skills.
One would think so.
But then they need to be trained on the technical skills,
that's
obviously.
That's where we come in. Yep, absolutely.
Okay. So I know we've talked a little bit about it, but you have formed something called, organically, I think, the School of Rocks. Let's talk about the School of Rocks.
As you can tell, I got Boxer Rocks, School of Rocks, and it seems to stick with my guys to understand a little bit better. The School of Rocks, so we were like every other company. We had a hard time finding quality drillers. Right, or drillers that could actually drill. So I asked around, how do we get them? How do we find them? Where they come from? As we've talked, I traveled to Mississippi, the only drilling school in the country. They do water wells. They don't do geotechnical, so no help there. Talking to Dan, oh, it takes, you know, 15, 20 years to make a driller. I'm like, well, can't do that. The other way you get them is you money whip them. Well, I don't want people that I money whip to my company, because it just means they can be money whipped out of the company. That's not what I'm looking for, right? So then I thought, well, if they're not, you know, not being born, they're not being trained anywhere, and I don't want to money whip them, I got to make them. I got to train them. So the catchword came out, School of Rocks. You know, it just came out one day. I don't even know how, but it did.
You're taking me back to Fred and Barney and the Flintstones.
Yeah, exactly. And Jack Black is my spokesman for me. We have a lot of fun with that. But I started with a very simple question to Dan and Dave. I go, exactly what you asked me. If somebody said they're a driller and they walked through the door, what would a best-in-class driller look like that we'd hire and pay them, you know, $60,000, $80,000 to go run a rig and a crew and manage our customers? What would that look like? And so we went down this. Here's all the certifications, whether it's OSHA, AED, Bloodborne, all of those type of regulatory things, Class B, CDL. And then that was easy. That's easy training. Then it became the art form. We can teach some mechanical how to pull sticks and all that great stuff. Then it became this art form. Art form of drilling when you're in this type of formation or this type. And Dan's like, oh, it'll take, you know, 20 years for everybody to get that. And I'm like, I haven't got 20 years. I'm not a spring chicken anymore. I can't wait that long. And it hit me, and please, educational people, don't ding me on the words. I said, why can't we do labs? That's how doctors learn how to do things. They cut up cadavers and stuff, right? I did it in high school. It's worms and frogs. How do we do labs? Because I have 12 labs going on every single day, all across Texas, in every formation you can think of. What if one of these students sat with a Dan or Dave and learned how to drill in that formation over and over and over for over a week or two? They would develop a sense of how to manage that formation. Then the next one. So I enlisted, you know, one of my employees who's an ex-drill sergeant, so he understands training a little bit and had managed some things, and my significant other, who's been in the educational world for many, many, well, a few years. I want to back up on that a little bit. to help me develop kind of a curriculum or a program of instruction of what a School of Rocks would look like with a CDL and water well license, and just how do we create this? And so the School of Rocks was kind of formed, and I don't know if it was formed, but it was put on paper of this is what it would look like if we had to do this. And I went, can I get some professionals help? And here we are.
There we go. Here we are. Trying to put some professionalism around some guiding standards.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's where the School of Rocks came from, was how do we train and certify people as drillers? And how can you do that? I believe it can be done in about 6 months. That's what I believe. Dan thinks I'm crazy, and that's okay. I know it's not 20 years, but it may be a little longer. But I really do, done correctly, you could probably knock this out in 6 months to have a very competent driller. It's not a dance valves driller. I understand that. But someone I think that has enough experience and skill sets, labs done correctly, about 6 months, someone could be out making $60,000 to $80,000. I truly believe that.
That is definitely a living wage that could change the trajectory of someone's life and their families for 100%. Many years to come.
100%.
With a good career. So, Well, Chip, you and I will definitely continue conversations down that path.
Super.
For purposes of today, though, if someone is listening today and they want to learn more about your industry, they want to learn more about Corco, can you give us some information for a website, contact information? Where do they go?
Certainly you can go to our website at www.corcousa.com, and all the contact information is there. You can call anybody, hit that number, and punch any of the numbers and say you're interested. Certainly you can stop by. We're at 2200 South Riverside in Fort Worth, and you'll see Miss Karen. She runs the place. I do not. Let's make no mistake about that. But she'll set you up an application and all those things, and we'll get you started there. But you can certainly stop by, and we'd love to meet you. Absolutely.
That's great. Anything else that you would like to tell us, parting words today, pertaining to your company, the drilling world, anything that you might like to, a message you might want to deliver to our young folks who are listening?
That's a big one to swallow. I appreciate your partnership and the discussions we've had, the awareness that I think has to come, the importance of this industry, the ability to create a super career for you and your family. Doesn't matter what you've done in the past, you start today to build a career that, again, I've got guys that have passed that are making $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, and we're changing a person and a family. And if we don't do that one person at a time, are we going to really change society? So I'm really passionate about that side of it, is producing careers for people who walk into companies and get told no because you don't have a college education, you don't have this. I just don't believe in that. So I don't care what you did yesterday. Come see me today.
I love it. Great words to leave on. Chip, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here today. Thank you so much. If you're all listening, please go visit Chip's website, reach out to his organization, and we at TCC will continue conversations with you and your industry. So thank you so much. And for our listening audience, thank you again, and we will look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Workforce Lens. Thank you.
Thank you.